You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Farah. Coming up, we talked to a Middle East expert about yesterday's terror attack in Turkey.
First, a video of the arrest of Janelle Laird, a young black woman, went viral last week. In the video, she was confronted outside of Madison's Easttown Mall by two white male police officers who used force, including a taser and physical force, to restrain her.
Laird was being arrested after mall security called the police after she allegedly confronted a food court employee with a knife, claiming that her cell phone had been stolen. After being taken into custody, she was ultimately released 2 days later and referred to an alternative restorative justice program.
Madison Police Chief Mike Koval will join us tomorrow, but in an earlier press conference, he said that the police department goes on over 15,000 calls a month and that in their most recent quarterly report on use of force, only 0.0025 of 1% fell into that category. He said engagements were overwhelmingly characterized as peaceful.
There are still many questioning police use of force and police accountability in Laird's case. Joining us now is Eric Upchurch. He's one of the co-founding members of the Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition, and he wrote a piece for Madison 365 called Why Janelle's Release is Not Really a Win for Her or Any of Us. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Janelle Laird was released, put in this alternative program instead of being charged potentially with felonies. You say it's not a win for her or for the community. Why not?
Well, as I outlined in the article, anytime that you're the reason we have to take a look at this from the standpoint of why this is an exception, why Janelle is getting this exception. District Attorney Ozan made it clear that the Dane County's restorative justice court program or restorative court program is for youth offenders with misdemeanor level crimes. But here we have felony level crimes that are being treated as misdemeanor crimes. And so what's the reason for that exception? And when you look at the case, and District Attorney Ozan says that the community's overwhelming response to this case gives rise to the exception. And well, why did the community respond this way? If you look on Facebook, if you look at all of the comments, you'll see overwhelmingly people are saying this should not have happened. It doesn't matter what Janelle was doing before this moment. What we saw was a subdued 103-pound 18-year-old unarmed black girl standing alone with an officer, and moments later she had racked up felony charges and officers were, quote, injured as a result of their attempt to control a situation that was already under control. So because we see an exception, we treat the case exceptionally, it's almost counterintuitive to then refer to allow this exception to culminate in a restorative justice practice, which really is a distraction in a way, because it doesn't take away the felonies that the community overwhelmingly has exclaimed she does not deserve, and which has given rise to this exception. So we have an exception, but it's not a real exception.
What do you think we should be focusing on this incident instead of this, as you suggest, exception to the rule that you're pointing out?
Well, I think we should be focusing on why this situation went the way that it did, and why it's being handled in a way that's contrary to what anyone who's seen this video would believe it should be handled. And there are two reasons for that, and they all fall under the same umbrella of the need for community control over police. If the community was in control of the police, actually a good example, Tessalie Kellogg, she crashed a moped on the same day, crashed her moped. She resisted arrest. She wasn't brutalized. She wasn't beaten. And part of the reason for that is because the police are accountable to the white community. This was a white woman. There was something in that police officer that let him know that he should not kick and beat and punch and tase this white woman. But here we have a young black girl in a similar situation, calm, in fact, and she did not resist. What she did do was react to the escalation that trained police officers induced. So we need to foster a culture that doesn't make that seem like a good idea to police officers. And what we've seen is that when police officers are accountable to the communities that they serve, things like this happen less. So that's the why it happened. That's part of addressing why it happened. Now, how we're responding to it, we're responding to this with restorative justice. We're responding to this with felony charges. And by we, I mean the city. I mean Madison Police Department. This is not something that anyone, I would say, who, it's just not right. And the community should be able to say, this isn't right, and we should be able to treat this case in a truly restorative fashion where we're holding the City of Madison Police Department accountable for their actions. Madison Police Department isn't being held accountable here. We have officers being called victims of and being battered by a 103-pound 18-year-old black girl. How are trained officers being battered by, I mean, where in that video did we see officers being battered? And if you look at the charges, they're all related to the escalation that the officers induced, but we have no accountability for the officers, and that is where we sell ourselves short. If we're going to see differences, if we're going to see benefits, if we're going to see real change, we have to hold the officers accountable as well.
Some people, in watching the video and looking at the police report, have said she had been reported as issuing threats of violence, had displayed a weapon. She wasn't complying with police orders at that point, and people have said police are using their training to try to get compliance in with someone who had made a threat, who had displayed a weapon. You don't buy that ultimately?
No, I don't buy that. I mean, first off, let's just say it was a gun and not a knife. Okay, we've seen many times, and I'll use Dylan Roof as an example. This guy walked into a church and shot 9 people and walked out, and you know, was damn near holding hands with police officers. Where was it because he was more compliant that he didn't resist, or did they just not escalate the situation? We have Janelle here. There's this alleged knife in the mix, but in the video that we all saw, there was no knife. In the video that we all saw, there was no threat. So people saying she deserved this, I mean, if you were standing still and someone walked up to you and began to escalate and threaten you, what would you do? So there's a break in that analysis. And I could understand if maybe she was wielding some weapon and they arrived on the scene and they said, drop your weapon, and she didn't. I could understand a need, the feeling of a need to control the situation. But that's not what we were witnessing. We were witnessing a girl who was unarmed, without a weapon, standing still, and the Madison Police Department escalated the situation in a way that caused her injury.
Talking to Eric Upchurch from the Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition, talking about this incident. It went viral. It was caught on video of an arrest of a young black woman in a Madison mall. The Madison Police Department Professional Standards Division will be reviewing this incident. The police chief looking for an independent investigator to look at the footage. What would you like to see when it comes to how police interact with the public, with black people in particular in Madison in situations like this? What would you like to see change, Eric?
Well, we need real accountability, and we have to accept the fact that everyone's human. We all have our flaws. We all have our shortcomings. I don't know what it's like to live the life of someone that's differently abled, has a wheelchair, so I'm naturally just going to do and say things that in some cases might neglect that population. But I have to make an effort. I have to recognize that. I have to make continuous effort to be mindful of that. We don't see that here in our police department. And because of that, and because of the detrimental effects that they have on our community, we need community control over the police. If we live in a democracy, if the people have the power, then what's the issue with community control over the police? That's going to ensure that less of these things happen and that we get officers like those that escalate situations for no reason, like Matt Kenney, who killed Tony Robinson and also killed in 2007. We'll get them out of the way so that we can be truly safe on both sides of the fence.
We'll bring in a caller now. Mike is with us from Ladysmith. Mike, hi.
Yeah, I'm reacting to this the premise that he's setting up about how police should be taking account. When, first of all, videos stand on their own by themselves, but they lose all context. So if you get a call, and I'll just include the officer that was involved in the shooting last year, I'll include that in the same analysis. Is that if you get a call to respond to a situation in which there is already violence occurring, which there has been a threat of violence or a threat of a weapon, and that is what the officer is responding to. So already in his head, he, whether he sees a weapon or not, he knows that what he's been called to is a situation that has already been violent, has already been reported to either have a weapon or there's been other physical violence occurring. And then when they get on the scene, if the person does not, respond to the orders of the officer to be calm and to, put their hands behind your back or whatever the order may be, that is resisting arrest, and they have every right to be defending themselves against what they don't know is being a clear situation.
Mike, thanks for the call. So the video doesn't give us all the context, Mike says, Eric, and there's a potentially dangerous situation. Officers, he says, justified in escalating the use of force.
Well, I would say that the reaction of the district attorney and the chief of police would say otherwise. And let's just focus on them for a second. Let's assume that they have all of the pieces of information needed to make a sound judgment about the situation. And their judgment is, wait a minute, this case needs to be treated differently. If the officers were justified in their conduct, why are we having this discussion? Why is our felony charges being referred to a restorative justice pilot program that's only meant for misdemeanors? If nothing went wrong here, if there was no need for exception. So I'm going to defer to the public officials and the law enforcement here where they say, look, this wasn't right, and we're going to do something about that. But what they did just wasn't enough, and it didn't hold the officers accountable. It didn't hold true to the reason why they said this wasn't right.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Eric Upchurch. He's a founding member of the Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition. He wrote a Madison 365 piece called Why Janelle's Release is Not Really a Win for Her or Any of Us.
We'll pick up our conversation and talk to the former chief of the Madison Police Department in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about the recent arrest and subsequent release of 18-year-old Janelle Laird. A video of her arrest at Madison's Easttown Mall went viral last week and reignited the conversation about the use of force by police, especially on African Americans.
The current Madison Police Chief Mike Koval has stood by the officers who arrested Laird but mentioned there will be an investigation. Here he is talking about the arrest at a press conference.
In the course of making her arrest finally happen, as you see, it went from bad to worse in terms of her unwillingness to simply surrender her liberty, put her hands behind her back, allow her wrist to be handcuffed and put in the back seat of a squad car. I think that the decentralization, which went to the floor, and subsequently those strenuous back and forth between the officers as well as her, those will be the issues that will ultimately be evaluated by administrative review and ultimately determine whether the officers in fact use the appropriate use of force consistent with state guidelines.
Koval went on to say that the video is a snapshot of what happened from the point of onset, the point the officers were finally able to put her in handcuffs. We'll be talking to Chief Koval tomorrow. Now we're going to get a perspective from the former chief of the Madison Police Department. Reverend David Cooper served as Madison Police Chief from 1972 to 93. He's the author of the book Arrested Development, A Veteran Police Chief Sounds Off About Protest, Racism, Corruption, and the Seven Necessary Steps to Improve Our Nation's Police. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for inviting me here.
Well, you've written about this, and I want to key in on something that Chief Koval had said. Did the officers act consistently with state guidelines? You've written that in many cases, you think, is not enough. State guidelines aren't enough. Police departments should do better. Why is that?
Well, those are the minimum standard, just like the deadly force standard that was articulated by the U.S. Supreme Court in their 1989 decision on Graham versus Connor, saying that sort of a standard of if an officer feels fear that he or she can use deadly force to eliminate that threat. That's the lowest standard. That's whether or not we put police officers in jail for violating it. What I'm talking about is how does the community want its police officers to operate? And that goes the same for those state defensive tactic standards is, sir, sure. And that's why the Janiel thing will probably turn out to be, oh, officers were following their training. And I'm saying, stop, community, look at this training. Do you want, as Chief Koval mentioned, officers in handling a young woman to use what is called these decentralization tactics and use knee strikes to her torso and to get her on the ground and repeatedly tase her? Is this what we want to accept in the community? And so I would tend to join what Eric Upchurch says. To me, community-oriented policing is the community sets the standards for their police, saying that is not appropriate, this is what we want instead, and the police must comply. Now, that creates a lot of attention in the community, but precisely that's what it's all about. Then all we have to do is add the ingredient of race. And what we're trying to do in this country right now is to rebuild trust among communities of color that police can be trusted and supported in their work. And post-Ferguson, that has tended to be pretty well, that bank account of police trust has been pretty well emptied. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And this is not new. I mean, I dealt with this in 1968 in the middle of the civil rights movement when I was a street cop in Minneapolis. Dr. King had been shot. I realized right then, and a few of my colleagues realized at the same time, that from this time on, every encounter with a black person is going to, we're going to have to demonstrate that we're not like those cops in the South.
Well, looking at the idea of community standards here, there's been a really split response to people seeing this video, looking at the police report, some saying, as you do, as our previous guest said, that this was an over-escalation by police. Other people, like one of our previous callers and others out there saying, you've got somebody who threatened violence. You've got somebody who brandished a knife. Police are justified if they don't comply in escalating the use of force to guarantee compliance and really guarantee that there's not a lethal outcome in this. So what do you say to them?
First of all, Janiel did not have a knife in her hand. I understand the knife was in the backpack, and it was something that she did earlier. But I come from the school that says it doesn't make any difference what your prior conduct was. You know, we're not going to use that when we arrest you. We're not going to punish you for what you did. What we're going to do is put you into custody so that the system can respond to what we say that you've done. And I'm just saying that, you know, I've led police for 25 years. I've been a police chief. I worked on the street in the tactical unit for 8 to 10 years before that. I taught self-defense tactics throughout the state of Minnesota for about 5 years before I came to Madison. And I'm telling you that is an unacceptable takedown and use of force by two police officers that should know better and know how to handle a young 100-plus pound woman, regardless of her level of restraints. She did not have to be treated that way. And I don't care which way this goes, if officers are found to have been legally operated, and they very may well are saying this keeps with the legal standard, this is how they're trained, I'm saying the community stop right there and say, is this the way you want your daughters handled? And I would say that anybody who watches those videos say, I don't want my daughter treated like that. Now, some people might say they do. But in a free society, in a democratic society in which people's rights are very, very important, and how we respect human persons is ultimately the test of this society, police can do better.
What would you like to see different in police training? How would you like to see police trained going into an incident like this?
Well, first of all, sure, police are trained, and we know how to take somebody to the ground when they have to. But this did not necessitate, this level of resistance by a young girl did not necessitate the kind of techniques that you do to take down a 200-pound intoxicated man. So there's a level of proportionality here. And proportionality has to be into this equation. There's no reason why two police officers, each grabbing her wrist, having control of her shoulder, could not escort her to that police car and take her out of custody. Even if we ratchet back, if she was in an extremely, high agitated attitude at that time, they could have waited there. They could have put her in an office and talked to her and calmed her down before they attempted to take her out. They could have called for a female officer, preferably, I think, then there's a. We certainly have a diverse police department, a female officer of color who'd come in there and talk to Janelle and try to get this thing settled down. There's a lot of things that could have been done that weren't done, and this did not turn out very well.
David, briefly as we wrap up, what would you like to see the next step be from city leadership, the community, the police department?
Well, we must have a community-wide discussion about this. And instead of running, everybody, taking to the barricades, the police chief has to understand the feelings of the black community when they see two white officers use what I would term excessive force on a young black woman. That has high tension placed into this community. So the police department has to get down there and talk with the community and say, look, this was not right. We can do better, and we will show you how we're doing better. So there's got to be some demonstrated change that's going on there. If 40% of all the arrests of people in Madison are people of color, then how people treat people of color is very important to everyone.
And we'll leave it there for now, David. Thanks for joining us today.
All right. You're welcome.
That's Reverend David Cooper. He served as Madison Police Department Chief from 1972 to 1993. We talked about this police use of force incident went viral after the arrest and subsequent release of 18-year-old Janelle Laird.